This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Intercepted by Apple.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubin shot the pipe, fumble the football.
Bang.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
The jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, a special two-hour show live from the Combine in Indianapolis. Three straight days of two-hour shows from noon to two right here on Giants.com as the very beginning of the scouting process in the offseason really gets going. A lot of stuff coming your way on today's show. Ben McAdoo spoke to the media earlier today. We'll play his full press conference back for you. After the press conference, we'll be joined by Tom Rock. We'll analyze what the coach had to say, and we'll take your calls as well. All throughout the show, we'll squeeze you in between our guests at 201-939-4513. Other guests you'll hear from today, Rick Saratella, one of our great draft experts from NFL Draft Bible. He'll be with us. Jenny Ventress from SI, MMQB. She'll be with us as well. And then Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus will give us an inside look at some of the analytics of the draft class for this season. So a very, very busy show. And of course, when you look at the Combine, folks, this might be the beginning of the televised portion of the draft process, but a lot of the hard work by the Giants scouts and general manager, it's already done. They've looked at a lot of the game film. They've looked at these players over the course, in some cases, three or four seasons to get a feel for who they are. The Combine in general is used to either confirm or raise questions about what coaches have already seen on the game film, taking a look at these guys playing in games, which is always the most important part. At the Combine, you have things like the medical, which hearing from Ben McAdoo earlier today is really the most important thing you get out of the Combine, seeing what these guys' status is in terms of some medical issues he had in college. We've seen guys like Miles Jack drop a full round in the draft because of medical evaluation, so that's very important. Measurement for a lot of these guys is very important. NFL teams like guys to be a certain height, size for certain positions. That happens here at the Combine. Then, of course, you get what you see on television. You see all the guys running the 40s, running the short and long shuttles, the gauntlet drill for the wide receiver, obviously the bench press, the broad jump, the high jump, and those are the things that really give NFL teams a better idea for how these guys work as overall athletes. And I really think those events are very important for guys from smaller schools who didn't see the same competition as players from the Big Ten, from the SEC, to see if their raw physical skills do match up to some of the best guys in the country. So we'll cover all of that over the next few days right here on Giants.com. Make sure you stay tuned. But figure the best way to get things started is to hear from the head coach of the New York Football Giants. We will watch his press conference when we return to Big Blue Kickoff Live right after this.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
Call me Chef Boy OD.
Not everybody gets this opportunity, and you always want to show it out.
All right, we ready to go here? All right, great to be back. Exciting to be back. It's really the kickoff of the draft process for the coaches. Mark Ross and the scouts, they do a great job setting the table for us. Excited to be here. Let's open it up. Well, it just really depends on how things shake out, whether it's the free agent market or whether it's a draft class. It depends on what you have to choose from. The guys on your roster really going into the season, we had two players that we felt pretty good about playing fullback for us, and neither of them stayed healthy, and that was a part of it, really, or for one reason or another. They weren't a part of the team, so we had to go in another direction, and we used what we had. And we'll continue to evaluate it. If we feel that there's someone out there that can help us, we'll use them.
Ben, were you glad to see Jason Pierre-Paul coming back
Yeah, you know, it's great to have JPP around. We think highly of him. Obviously, that's the business part of the equation. I try to stay out of that as much as I can. But Jason's a great part of the team. You know, someone who made made some progress last year, and it'll be good to have him back.
Have you spoken to him at all? Because he had indicated he didn't want a franchise tag and didn't want another one-year situation.
I haven't had a chance to speak with Jason.
Are you concerned at all that if you guys don't get a deal done by next week, what would be cap hit?
No. You know, you go through, we evaluate the free agents. We went through that process. Had some meetings on it, and you take a look at free agency, and if you have a chance to hit with some clean players that you feel good about that can make you better, then you take your shot. If not, you move on, and you look forward to the draft. Yeah, I had a chance to speak with both Victor and Rashad. They were, you know, that's a tough part of the business. That's not why you get into coaching. You know, Victor obviously went through some tough times. The last 3 years were very difficult for him. And, you know, he bounced back this year, had a chance to stay healthy. Playing that first full year after the injury is huge. And, you know, once a Giant, always a Giant. And he's a big part of Giants history. You know, Rashad, had a chance to speak with Rashad on the phone. He was out. He was already training for next year. He wouldn't expect anything less from him. But, you know, Rashad and I have had some good conversations over the 3 years since I've been here. And, you know, he was a big part of our offense, a big part of the leadership in the locker room. And we'll miss him in that regard. I don't think so. I don't think you look at it like that. You go through the evaluation process, and whether it's free agency or the draft, you try to come up with the best players that you can that makes the most sense for the long-term health of the organization.
Coach, as far as physically,
You know, Paul's a lot like the rest of the rookies. I think it's important when these rookies, they get back to New York, they understand that, you know, they don't have everything figured out, that we need to keep our thumb on those guys, and they need to grow and they need to get better. We need to make gains. Our rookie class needs to make gains. We have a nice class of guys there.
All right, that's the first part of head coach of the Giants, Ben McAdoo, as he joins us right here on Giants.com. That wasn't obviously the full press conference, so I'll give you kind of a little rundown of what he did the rest of the way. Couple things you heard about. He talked about Victor Cruz and, of course, Rashad Jennings. He mentioned Paul Perkins, how he needs to get better. He did improve last season, did a very good job. Obviously, Ben McAdoo did make the point that in terms of the draft process, the coaching staff, this really is the beginning of it for them. They've been spending the last 2 months looking at free agents, looking at their own self-scout tape to try to figure out how to get the team better. So this really is an introductory process for the coaching staff and Ben McAdoo on the draft prospects. So you really don't get much about the draft class from Ben in that press conference. He focuses more on the team itself. He talked about adding a running back. If it's a fit to go with Paul Perkins, that's fine. He emphasized that although Paul Perkins played well last year, he's somebody that the Giants will hope to get better and improve more this offseason as he comes back and tries to get a lot better. You talk about Eric Flowers a little bit, how he thinks he has a ton of confidence in Eric Flowers. That was the quote, ton of confidence. He works hard. They need him to grow, room to grow. He would not commit to Eric Flowers at any particular position, much like Jerry Reese said at his press conference earlier in the year. So that right now wide open, not committing to him at any specific part. By the way, as I go through these, we'll try to squeeze in some calls, folks. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can watch that full McAdoo presser, by the way, on Giants.com. Check it out. We'll have Tom Rock in about 10 minutes. But until then, let's take some calls from you at 201-939-4513. As I mentioned earlier, McAdoo confirmed it. The medical is really a big part of the combine, a really thing you have to look at. He was asked about play calling duty, said he enjoys being asked the question, but did not give an answer. So that's something they're still evaluating. We'll see what happens next year. He mentioned Drell Adams growing last year as a tight end. And I thought one interesting thing that you'll see up on Giants.com later today, we did a little fan Q&A with some Twitter questions for Coach McAdoo. And we did ask him about the tight end position, and we talked about it. And I thought it was interesting the way he discussed how there were three different types of tight ends. And you use any of the three kinds of players in different ways. He mentioned your traditional inline tight end that can block a little bit, go out in routes, make some catches. He mentioned the guys you can split out wide, more of a slot player, more of a receiver. And then he talked about the H-back type that can block as a fullback and come out of the backfield. So those are really some of the different types of tight ends that he talked about over the course of our conversation with him earlier today. He talked about the value of meeting with quarterbacks at the combine, how he really likes talking to them, getting an idea of their football intelligence, putting them up on the whiteboard, and then out on the field, seeing some of their fundamentals, see if they can build chemistry with wide receivers quickly. Those are some of the things that they'll take a look at with quarterbacks at the combine. You mentioned the backup quarterback position, obviously with Ryan Nassib and Josh Johnson very up in the air. They're taking a look at free agents. They're taking a look at guys in the draft. That's something they'll figure out as the offseason goes along. He talked about B.J. Goodson. They hope he'll develop next year. How they'll use him remains to be seen, but they did like that. In terms of trying to improve the offense, he did mention that the team was third in the league in terms of third down, down in distance, but they did not convert well enough on third down. The one thing he did focus on are the 27 turnovers, and he said they were fortunate to win as many games as they did, given the 27 turnovers, and that's one of the stats we gave much of the year. The Giants are only one of two teams in the playoffs that had a minus turnover ratio, had more turnovers than they had takeaways. So that's something they're going to try to get improved heading into next season. He reiterated something we've said on the show, how it was the case for the offense last year, defense this year. You can't just show up and assume you're going to pick up where you left off. You have to continue to work, reassert yourselves, and continue to be good. That's one thing they'll try to do in the offseason. And then the final question of his press conference, that came from Paul Schwartz from the New York Post. He was asked about the offensive line and whether or not the lack of protection for Eli Manning had something to do with those turnovers and the general lack of consistency on the offensive side of the ball. And Ben McAdoo said, look, he thinks it's too simple to look at the offensive line and say, look, that's why we had all these problems. Sure, they need to play better. They need to give Eli more time. The Giants saw a lot of man-to-man defense, so he has to hold the ball a little bit longer for guys to free themselves from bump-and-run coverage, things like that. But he also said Eli needs to play better with faster feet, move in the pocket, things like that. So those are things that he will look forward to with the Giants offensively this year to try to get better. The pockets in the NFL aren't always clean, and sometimes you have to be able to execute without having a clean pocket. All right, let's get to a couple calls before we get Tom Rock joining us at around 12:20 right here on Giants.com. And who better than to lead us off from the combine in Indianapolis than our good buddy Charlie in Portland, Maine. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, John. You're looking dapper there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and you're representing the Giants very well. But it really saddens me and kind of sickens me a little bit of what you just said about McAdoo.
Talking
How so? About the O-line. Well, it isn't. It's not as simple as the O-line, and I have total confidence in Eric Flowers, and it's really not the O-line. Eli has to have faster feet. Eli is who he is. He ain't going to get faster feet at 36 years old, so he has to get them an O-line that can protect them and run the ball. So, to me, I'm not saying that McAdoo's got to throw everybody on the bus, but he should have some concern and some urgency saying, yeah, we need to get that fixed, and I'm just a little, not surprised, but a little saddened that he at least didn't say, yeah, that's an area that we really need to work on.
Well,
and
Charlie,
make better.
I want to add a couple things to what you said. One, he did say that the offensive line has to improve and they have to play better. That's what he said before he referenced Eli maybe moving in the pocket, handling dirty pockets a little bit better. So he did say that, and he didn't say total confidence in Eric Flowers. He said a ton of confidence, but he did not say Flowers is going to be the left tackle. He said he's an offensive lineman, and they will find the place that fits him best. So I think you're overstating maybe a little bit exactly how much confidence, you know, he stated he had in the line and the way it is. I think he knows it has to get better, and that was an issue with the Giants over the course of last season that must improve.
Yeah, I know, and that's one of the things that we kept hearing every week. You know, these guys have to play better. These guys have to play better. Well, they didn't play better. So, I mean, we can't just stay with the same people we got and expect them to play better. So, you know, I know he's not going to, you know, he isn't the guy going out getting free agents. But, you know, I just felt a little concerned that and a ton of confidence for Flowers. I don't think anyone out here besides him and Jerry Reese has a ton of confidence in Eric Flowers.
Well, Charlie, look, I understand from a fan perspective why you would say that, but you have to understand, for a head coach who's trying to get this guy better and still thinks he has the talent to become, even if he's not going to be the franchise left tackle, if he thinks he can be a very good offensive lineman somewhere on this line moving forward, you want a guy that's going to have some confidence, and you don't want your head coach taking shots at him publicly. That's not going to help anybody. So I don't think you can expect Ben Mackin to come out and start pounding Eric Flowers publicly. That's not going to help the situation, and that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I would have said, I just hope Eric Flowers is ready to compete when he comes into camp and get better. That's what I would like to hear him say, because that would maybe light a fire under his butt a little bit. But that's cool. John, have fun there, and let's see who, you know, look at those tight ends. I want to see which tight ends we're going to get to help Eli.
Absolutely. Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate the call, bud.
Hey, John.
And look, we are going to hear from tight ends over the course of the week here at the Combine in Indianapolis. We are going to hear from them. We're going to see them, and we'll see exactly what guys might be available for the Giants and the type of players that they are as you get further along in the draft process. All right, thank you, Charlie. Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. He's going to join us next on Giants.com. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, Tim. What's up?
After releasing Victor Cruz and Rashad James, re-signing Zach Diossi, and placing a franchise tag on Jason Pierre-Paul, the Giants should look to sign Kenny Britt, Nick Folk, Jermaine Gresham, T.J. Lang, Latavius Murray, and Russell Okung.
That is a long list, Tim. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. But first of all, I don't think you can realistically fit those players, which are some of the top players of their position under the salary cap. It's a nice wish list, but I don't think that's something that's going to work financially, especially given what you're going to have to, you know, give to Jason Pierre-Paul under that franchise tag, which, by the way, is not official. A lot of numbers have been thrown out there. You don't actually know what that number is yet. Judy Batista did, though, report this morning, I should point out. She's with NFL.com, that the salary cap this year has been set for $167 million, which is about a $12 million raise over last year's cap number of $155. So that's something to keep in mind. And then that franchise tag number is determined by the average salary, top five salaries of that position over the last 3 years as a percentage of the average cap over the 3 years, and then it's applied to this year's cap. So over the next day or two, I think we should have, now that the cap's been set, what that number's going to sit at in terms of JPP's franchise tag. But I think you did hit on some of the positions. You talked about an offensive tackle in Russell Okung, who has played left tackle in this league. I think that's a good place to start. You talked about a tight end. I think that's a good place to start. So I think you're on the right path, Tim. But I think asking for all those guys, which are some of the tops at those positions, I think getting a little bit greedy there. We'll see if they can pull off some of that. One more call before we say hi to Tom Rock. We'll have some time before that. Let's go to Daniel in Rhode Island. He joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis on Giants.com. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good. How you doing, John?
Doing great, Daniel. What's up?
All right. So I just want to talk about how the salary cap is going to make a lot of moves coming up. I know how recently letting go of Victor and letting go, how he took a pay cut, Rashad, and how the cap is going up. Like, people are talking about this move that was just made yesterday with Antonio Brown getting signed, mm-hmm. and we have Odell. Like we want to see Odell get the money he deserves. Do you think it's going to be for him in the future, or is it going to be on players that we could use now to, you know, get Eli at least one more shot to, you know, get another ring?
Well, the Giants still control Odell Beckham for two more years. He has a four-year contract as a first-round pick, and then they could pick up that fifth-year option. He's played for three seasons. So the Giants control his rights for two more years, and then, of course, they also have the option of franchise tagging him. I'm not sure at this point, when they have big-time players that are free agents like JPP, like Jonathan Hankins, they're going to worry about a player 2 years down the road. They have guys next offseason that are going to be free agents like Justin Pugh, like Weston Richburg. I think those guys would be closer to the to-do list because they're up sooner than a guy like Beckham. But trust me, the Giants are keeping an eye on the wide receiver market. Obviously, that Antonio Brown deal is now, I believe, on a per-year basis, the top wide receiver contract, a little bit more than what Julio Jones got. So, trust me, the Giants understand the need to have Odell Beckham Jr. here for a long time. I'm sure Odell wants to be here for a long time, and I'm sure they'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah, as a fan, you know, you see the frustrations how, like, we go from, like, worst defense to best defense, and then our offense can't pick it up. It kind of, like, frustrates you, and, you know, it, like, you want to see someone to complement Shepard and Odell, who have years to play with us. So I was thinking, you know, like, a player that I saw in the draft, Mike Williams from Clemson, they have him described as an NFL comparison to Plaxico Burress, which was, like, perfect. I'm like, we need a tall, deep guy. And I know he's a rookie, and, like McAdoo said, we got to work on turnovers and things like that, but I just want to see our receiver set just have that chemistry and have Eli have one more shot, as well as, you know, getting one more running back to give Eli, you know, pass protection. So I see Adrian Peterson hit the market. I'm like, that guy knows how to pick up blocks. Our offensive line is shaky like crazy, so we want to see – you know, our offense pick it up for sure in comparison to how our defense goes from, like, worst to first almost.
Yeah, you know? Daniel, I hear you. I think the one caution flag I'd put up for Adrian Peterson, who is a free agent, though the rumors are the Vikings are going to try to bring him back at a lower number if they can figure that out, is that he's actually complained about running the ball out of the shotgun. He's a guy that likes to be in the I formation. He likes to be in your traditional set. And if you've watched the Giants under Ben McAdoo's offense, they run a lot out of the shotgun. So I'm not sure the way the system is set up is really set up for Adrian Peterson's skill set. I, for one, would much rather invest in a younger running back than bring in a guy that's over 30. I think AP has some good years left. But I think given the deep nature of the draft class, you can get somebody between rounds 3 and 5 that can be a complement to Paul Perkins. I want to make sure Paul Perkins has the ability to be a real good player this year and get a lot of touches. I think he's young. I think he's good. And I think he's a guy that could be a real factor for the Giants this year. As a real playmaker, I think he's a big play threat. He's very elusive. He's fast. I really think they should give Paul Perkins a big opportunity. I don't think it's going to help him by bringing in somebody like Adrian Peterson. As for the wide receiver, I think body type-wise, I think Mike Williams is a very, very good example of the type of player that the Giants would look for in terms of a guy that would complement Shepard and would complement Beckham, who are both, you know, 6 feet or under. You know, Williams is like 6'3", 6'4". He kind of has those Mike Evans skills to go up and get the ball, even though he doesn't have great separation. So I do think that's the type of guy you could talk about. I think Williams or Corey Davis will be one of the two top wide receivers off the board. We'll see which one goes off first, depending on what teams need. I think how fast Mike Williams runs here this weekend will actually be important because he doesn't get great separation. And remember, we said this about Mike Evans a couple years ago, too. Doesn't get great separation, but his hands and his size allow him to be open even when he doesn't have that great separation. So I do think you have the right type of guy if you want to bring in a wide receiver to complement those top two guys.
All right. John, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate the call, man. No worries. 201-939-4513. We'll have Tom Rock in a couple minutes. I'm going to try to see if I can find a couple tweets right now before we get going. Here we go. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. Do you think the Giants will draft a cornerback for the slot position need, and at what spot of the draft do you think they'll do that? Here's how I think about the Giants in the corner position. They're in great shape. They have Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Eli Apple, and they have, of course, Janoris Jenkins. So they're very deep there. If you want to draft another corner, that's great for depth purposes. That's fantastic. You can't have enough corners, especially with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on the other side of 30. But do they need a slot guy now? No, they do not. I think DRC proved he was very good in that spot last year, and he can do a real good job in that spot moving forward. So I don't think that is a top priority. All right, folks, we're just getting started here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We heard from Ben McAdoo, and in just a minute or so, we'll be joined by Tom Rock from Newsday. when we come back from this break, right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Make sure you hang with us.
I know I was put in this position for a reason. That's why I have such a passion for kids, because I know the influence I could have on them and any opportunity I have to give back to interact with the youth and with people all around is a great opportunity.
That was a good play. Good work, man.
I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it. Some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids, that's what it's all about. I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
And we're back here at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. John Schmelk joined by Tom Rock, covers the Giants from Newsday. Tom, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing terrific, John. It's always good to see you in Indianapolis.
Absolutely. It's always fun to get out here. It's, you know, people you see the events on TV, but it's really a 4 or 5 day NFL convention. Everybody that's around the league, scouts, owners, general managers, coaches, agents, reporters, agents, everyone is here.
That's basically what it is the NFL's annual convention instead of the Combine. To see it how it's grown just in the past couple of years, you know, right behind the camera here, they're set up for the bench press that they're going to let the fans come in and see. There's so much public access, and you can go over there and run the 3-cone drill if you want, and have all the kids do all the events that the players are going to go through. So it really has taken on a life of its own from that early beginnings when it was just basically to kind of get the guys a medical check.
Yeah,
before the draft, so they could check out how everybody's knees and elbows were doing.
Even Radio Row, we used to just be a row of about 6 to 10 tables in the hallway of the concourse in the stadium. Now they have an entire assembly hall, I guess I'll use the phrase.
Yeah, we have a big room here.
And you got the press conferences behind us. You got about 24 teams here with tables. So it really is a huge process. All right, we'll touch on the combine and the draft a little bit, Tom, but I want to focus with you on what we heard from Ben McAdoo earlier today.
Right.
Not surprising, Ben held his cards very close to the vest, didn't exactly divulge a ton. What was the big thing you took out of what Ben McAdoo said to the media today?
The big thing I took out was that they want to keep the defense getting better. I think that was the key thing, and that was something that they weren't able to do with the offense, bridging from 15 to 16. Obviously there was a big fall off. So he's very concerned, it seems, about having the defense continue to get better, even if it's 1% better. He said he wants them to continue to push and get better. So that includes bringing a lot of the same people back, and Jason obviously is going to be back in some form or another in 2017. There's a couple of other guys out there. I heard you just before the break talking about DRC a little bit and his future with the team, and Hankins certainly is. His future is a little muddy right now. It depends, I think, a lot on that salary cap space that gets freed up with Jason. So. But I think that was the big thing, is that he wants to keep that defense from falling into the trap that the offense had of going from the top of their game to taking a couple of steps backwards.
And I think a good place to start is Jason Pierre-Paul. The Giants placed a franchise tag on him. We don't know the exact number that tag is worth just yet, but we have a neighborhood. We know what the deal is. And I think, is it fair to say, Tom, in your opinion, that both JPP and the Giants would really prefer a long-term deal to get done relatively soon, so he's not playing on that one-year deal at that very high number?
Well, I don't think anybody, the Giants have never really had anybody play like that. I think Jumbo Elliott was the only other guy that they've had back in the 80s. since then, the Giants have always used the franchise tag as sort of a placeholder, as a way to buy some more time with a guy who's going to hit the market, and to keep him in under Giants control while they were still negotiating on these long-term deals. I think even 2 years ago when they had Jason on the franchise tag, that was probably the plan. I don't think anybody thought that he was going to go all the way to July 15th to sign that one-year deal. It wound up being that obviously July 4th was a bigger, much bigger date than July 15th in that case.
Yeah, a little bit.
But I think the plan here is to kind of get together and hammer out a long-term deal that's certainly more cap-friendly than the $17 million guaranteed in 2017.
Well, and you know, you mentioned that. How important, then, is it, do you think, for the Giants, and how much motivation, you know, how much is it a priority, then, for them to get something done before free agency starts March 9th?
Right.
So they know exactly the type of funds they have to either bring back Jonathan Hankins or look at other free agents.
Well, it's certainly, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. You say, well, the Giants took away all the leverage from Jason Pierre-Paul, but JPP certainly has enough leverage that he could show up at any day and sign that paper and say I'm in, $17 million, pay me.
Not a bad payday, by the way.
Not a bad payday, but it would also hurt the team. You know, it would sort of cripple the team, and that's also something that's probably in the back of his mind that he doesn't want to do. I think it's the best case scenario for both teams is before next week to get something done. I'm sure they're going to meet this week in Indianapolis here with his representatives and talk about things and see where they're at and. You know, try and get closer to a deal. My guess is it'll probably be similar to last year where they signed him. Last year wound up being a one-year deal right before the start of free agency. My guess is that it'll be about the same timeline this year.
How about Jonathan Hankins? How do you see his market? What do you see the chances of him coming back? And how much does this JPP decision have a domino effect on Mr. Hankins?
Yeah. I know a lot of people are very, very big on bringing Hankins back at any cost. They're a little probably... burned from Linval Joseph, and still have memories and visions of him.
Linval Joseph, post-traumatic
yes,
stress.
Yeah. which, and for a guy that size, that's a lot of stress.
Yeah.
So they're looking at him and saying, you know, we need him. I don't know. I'm not so sold on that. I think Hankins is a good player. I think you can find somebody that's. To go in there and stand next to Snacks and be the other defensive tackle and come out on third and longs and have another defensive end slide in there and things like that. You know, I think Hankins is a good player. I don't think he's a Linval Joseph. I don't think you need to break the bank for him. It'd be nice to have him back. He's a good player. You invested a second round pick in him. I think he played well for them. But I'm not in the camp that says that he's the guy that they need back to. Keep things moving forward.
Do you think to some extent he played out of position last year and he'd be better playing the spot that Snacks played, or do you think he can be a three-technique defensive tackle, which we ideally would like to be able to get to the quarterback a little bit
right,
more?
Right, right. Yeah, I thought he was going to get to the quarterback a lot more than he did.
Yeah, so did I.
Just because of the attention that Snacks got. I think there's those things are so subtle. On the inside, sometimes that those guys can do a lot. I don't think that necessarily playing in or out of position is such a big thing for those defensive tackles.
All right, Keenan Robinson, another free agent the Giants have on defense, and he was a pretty important part of their defense. He was on the field on pretty much all their passing downs, third and long, you know, second and long, you know, situations like that. He played right next to Jonathan Casillas. That was their most common linebacker combination. How important is it for them to bring him back, or do you think they can find someone to give them similar production elsewhere in free agency?
I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see what they think of B.J. Goodson, because he's going to be he's certainly the middle linebacker of the future, and whether or not that entails three down middle linebacker or being sort of the just the run stopper guy, I think that really hinges on what they do with Keenan Robinson. I thought Robinson played really well. I thought he made a lot of really strong plays. He was good on help special teams and did a lot of good things. So he's not going to break the bank. You can bring him back. He knows the system. He certainly knows the players, and I think he'd be a good fit here.
And, of course, the elephant in the room, of course, and Ben was asked about this, is the offensive line.
Yeah.
We've talked about it all offseason. We talked about it all during the season. And
Do you get many calls on the offensive line?
Just a couple. Just a couple. What's the solution here? Neither Jerry Reese or Ben McAdoo will commit to Eric Flowers as being the left tackle this year. They said he's an offensive lineman. We'll figure out where he fits best as we go through the offseason program. So I guess my question for you is, if they do want to try to find somebody that can be legitimate competition for him at the left tackle position, where are they going to find it? Because famously, we've heard it a million times, not a great draft class for offensive tackles. And frankly, left tackles don't become free agents that often.
Right.
It really doesn't happen. So what do you think the best path here is for the Giants to try to figure out that left tackle spot?
Well, as I've told other people, I don't think the answer to their offensive line woes is here in Indianapolis. I don't think that drafting somebody and having them come in and be unproven and starting over again in that kind of a situation is going to help anything. I think I'm of the belief that I would not be surprised if they started the season with Ereck Flowers at left tackle. I think it's most teams look at it as a 3-year investment in a first round pick. This is his third year. He's going to have to show up, but I think that they'll give him at least the start of this year. Now, do they go out on the free agent market and try and find a starting left tackle? I'm sure they'll be looking at a lot of them.
Who do you think could be an option?
Well, I don't know. Whitworth.
Do you think Whitworth's going to hit? He's a guy that's been his whole year in Cincinnati, and he said he wants to stay. He also said he wants to win. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think the chances he leaves? And how much is he going to cost? That's
how much
is he going to
cost?
Yeah.
He's old. He's 35. He's 35.
Yeah.
Russell Okung is another option. If he hits the market, it becomes a situation, John, like it's almost like a manager in baseball where the pitcher is struggling. And so you have a guy in a bullpen. So you just want to get the guy in the bullpen in. You don't care what the guy in the bullpen is doing. You just want to make a change, right? And so sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. To make a change just for change's sake and to get Ereck Flowers out of there, and playing right tackle, by the way, is no easy feat in this league either.
Yeah, there's no guarantee sliding him to the right side is going to fix things.
It's not going to change things. He's been cursed since he came into the league. This isn't supposed to be where he was. This is supposed to be his first year at left tackle when they drafted him, right? Because he was going to come in and play right tackle for a year, maybe two, and then slide over to left tackle, become the left tackle of the future. Instead, he became the left tackle of the present, and it never really connected. He did some good things. He's done some bad things,
yeah.
Some very visible bad things. And, it just hasn't worked out. So, I don't know what the answer is. I do believe though, and Ben touched on this a little bit earlier. I don't know if you talked about it on the program yet, that you don't have to have the best offensive line in the league to win. You just have to have a functional offensive line. There's a lot of dirty pockets, as he said, around the league,
yep.
and there's a lot of teams that struggle with this and try and find answers in other ways. The Giants don't have the most mobile of quarterbacks. He's not gonna elude pressure in that way. Ben talked a little bit about it. Eli not planting his back foot as much and waiting for those receivers and that's part of the problem too. So he gets a little gun shy sometimes when he starts to get hit. So the whole thing has to come together obviously and it has to get better. To what degree? Does it have to go from one of the worst to one of the best in the league? I don't think so.
It has to be good enough.
It just has to be functional.
Right.
It just has to be good enough to get the job done. And now, of course, there's going to be lapses and there's going to be breakdowns in protection. And everybody else's offensive line in the league always looks better than the one that you're looking at because you're not watching it day to day, snap to snap.
Of course.
That's just the way it is. But I think they have a pretty good core in the middle with Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh. I thought John Jerry actually played pretty well last year.
Especially in pass protection.
Yeah, yeah. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back. Eric's the big fish there, and he's got to start to step up.
Want to take a couple phone calls with me, Tom?
Yeah, sure.
All right, here we go. Let's go. We got Jason in New Jersey. He wants to add something on the offensive line. Shocking. Jason,
wow.
What's going on, pal? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
Well, you guys did hit the point with Ereck Flowers. He does need a lot of work. It doesn't make a difference if we slide him to the right tackle because it's the same thing. Like that game against the Cowboys at the home stadium. He just, left the right end in and hit Eli. No tomorrow. He needs a couple more more time and needs a lot of work. You know?
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate the call, man.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things Ben said today was that he's confident in Eric putting in the work. And I, you know,
can he move the guard, do you think, someday? Do you think is he too tall to be a guard in this league, or do you think he could do it?
It's not that easy. You know, it's not right. it's a different position. You know, we talk about moving from right to left and the changes that are involved there. To move from tackle to guard is a completely different position. It's a different skill set. It's like saying, well, can a tight end play wide receiver? You know, they do some of the same things. They block, they catch, they run routes, but it's in a different arena. And so to move to guard, and I think Justin has been one of the few who's been able to do that successfully, and he did it well. And the Giants have had actually some guys who have been able to do that. David Deal, I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, who've been able to play both of those positions. But you know, I don't think Flowers is a guard. I think he's too big. First of all, he'd get in the way. You know, not to be
on passing lanes.
Not to
I
be
mean,
too
he's,
blunt
he's
about
6'7".
It. He's, you know, to have a guy like that standing in front of the quarterback is an obstacle. I think he's meant to be a tackle.
All right, Tom. Final question before we let you go. I want to ask you about the tight end position.
Yeah.
What's the answer here? I mean, they've tried to kind of figure it out the last few years. Will Johnson got hurt beginning of the year. Is this a deal where they're going to try to find a tight end that could do everything, or are they going to try to partition this with an H-back / fullback, then you bring in a tight end you can spread out on third down? How do you think the best way is for the Giants to move forward here?
I believe that Will Johnson's injury was one of the biggest of the year for the Giants.
I agree.
It kind of crippled the whole running game and the passing game a little bit, and I think they were waiting for him to come back and believing that he was going to be the key, and it just never happened, and so they kind of cut bait before the season even started and put him on IR. I said earlier that I don't think the answer to the offensive line question is in Indianapolis. The answer to the tight end question may be here, and there's some pretty intriguing guys. You look at O.J. Howard and Njoku from Miami, you know, tremendous athletes. You know, really big wingspans and you know, high motor guys that you can kind of throw the ball to, and that's the kind of player that Eli has always thrived with as a tight end, as a guy that he can hit down the seam. Even Donnell, you know, he was a little limited in terms of once he got the ball, but he was able to run those routes and catch the ball. So I think that, you know, you look at Will Tye, and he seemed like all of the passes that he caught were facing the quarterback. He never caught the ball going.
He was never on the move, right?
He was never on the move. He was always finding a soft spot and settling in and catching the ball. And I think he needs a bigger body, a taller body to get down the field. You know, we mentioned Howard and Njoku. You know, the kid from Michigan who tore his ACL. Maybe he falls in the second round.
Yeah.
I don't know how ready he'll be to start the season, but. You know, he seems like the type of a tight end that the Giants have had in the past and had success with.
Tom, great stuff. We appreciate it.
John,
thanks so much.
Enjoy Indianapolis. Get over to St. Elmo.
I already did last night.
Oh,
it's done.
Did you have the shrimp cocktail?
Come on, of course. I'm surprised I can still speak today after the shrimp cocktail, but it was delicious.
Yeah, hit the spot.
Oh, it was good. Cleared all the sinuses out. It was perfect.
Good.
After you get off the plane.
It's not the combine until you get the horseradish.
Absolutely. That's Tom Rock from Newsday. Plenty more. We'll come back, take some of your calls, and Rick Serratella from NFL Draft Bible joins us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Hang with us.
Hey, guys.
You guys can stay home.
I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it.
I can read in bed and in purple.
Luckily, I got both of my parents in my life, and they've always been there. But some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids and those type of people by giving them some words, give them some knowledge, give them some love, give them a hug, that's what it's all about.
The golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated. Respect people. Show respect, listen to people, and treat them kindly.
I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
No! We're back here at the Combine in Indianapolis right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke with you. We'll continue to have a bunch of guests with us right here from the Combine as we get ready to take a look at these draft prospects as we get closer to the NFL draft at the end of April. We're waiting Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible. He'll be with us in just a second. But for now, let's go back to the phones. We haven't heard from this caller in quite a while, and I'm anxious to hear from him now. That's Kaiser in Yonkers. He joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Kaiser.
John,
how are you?
Kaiser here. Long time, 10th time.
Okay, excellent.
I think it's long time, 10th time.
Wonderful.
I'm trying to keep track. So I noticed, you know, the name of the show is Big Blue Kickoff.
That's right.
So why are you wearing a green tie today,
well,
John?
Well, there is some navy blue in there in between the green. It's actually kind of football-shaped design here. So I thought it was a good contrast in combination with the blue tablecloth. Kaiser.
Can't see it. What happened to those Giants polos that you guys used to sport all year? I think those look really snazzy.
See, I think when you're at an event like the Combine and you got everyone dressing up, I think you want to be in the suit and tie to really look like a professional, Kaiser.
So what's the buzz you're hearing around there, John? What's going on down at the Combine? Give me the overview.
Well, you know, honestly, Kaiser, and thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. This is the day where you hear a lot from the executives around the league about what's going on in the league in terms of, like, league business and things like that. You hear about individual teams, their needs, what they're doing. Today's almost more about the free agency part of things than it is about the combine. Obviously, the franchise tag deadline's today. You just had Trumaine Johnson from the Rams get franchised, according to Adam Schefter. So that's kind of the talk today. And then as we get further down the road, you will hear more about the draft guys as they begin to work out. And that's the perfect move over transition as we're joined by Rick Saratella, my good buddy from NFL Draft Bible. Rick, how you doing, pal?
Doing well.
It's good to have you. And obviously, we're going to see these guys start to work out. So I figure who better than to kind of give us a broad perspective on the draft class and what we'll be looking at this week than you and give us a little bit of a preview. By the way, we'll take some calls with Rick, too. If you want to get on the line and ask a couple specific questions about some players that fans, you guys want to know about, trust me, he knows everyone from the FCS to the FBS. Get on the line. Give us a call at 201-939-4513 or in hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to ask your question that way as well. Okay, Rick. Everything I've heard about this class, and I've taken a look at some of the players too, any of the common thoughts that you've heard around the league about this class do you really disagree with, and which ones do you really concur with?
Well, my perspective going into the draft every year is there's value in every round. So if you do your job, if you do your homework, you could find starters into day two, day three. And that's what I see in this year's draft class. Not sexy at top, doesn't have the franchise quarterbacks that we all like. Myles Garrett is the consensus number one. That remains to be seen. So, you know, the star power, maybe not so much as a Winston. We had Mariota. We had big franchise quarterbacks in years past. But when you take a look at the depth, there's some positions here like wide receiver, running back, tight end on the offensive side. You can get starters into day two.
And corner and DN too, right? Or big?
I have about a third of the first round is going to be defensive backs, six or seven corners, at least three safeties. I think a third of the first round will come from the secondary.
Wow.
Offensive line, maybe not so much as in years past. And I think, you know, that's where the Giants can get into some trouble because, you know, they need offensive line. I thought the most telling thing I got from the McAdoo presser today was didn't want to give a ringing endorsement to Ereck Flowers. To me, he could have stood by him and said, no, he's our left tackle. We're moving forward with him. But he said right now he's a member of the New York Giants. He's an offensive lineman on March 1st.
Right.
And to me, that says they're looking at left tackle.
Okay, well, let's start there. And, you know, you mentioned that this is not considered to be a very strong offensive line draft class. I'm going to rattle off some of the guys. Cam Robinson, a guy from the biggest program in Alabama. Then you have Ryan Ramczyk, the kid from Wisconsin, played only 1 year of Division I football, coming off hip surgery. You got the Bowles kid from Utah, Antonio Garcia, small school in Troy. How do you evaluate the top of this tackle draft class? Do you see a left tackle among them? And how do you think these guys will fall out as the draft goes along? And is someone worth picking in the first round to be a starting left tackle year one if you want to go in that direction?
Garrett Bowles is my guy, Utah. I think he can play on the island, on the left side, that is. And you know, when you talk about his fundamentals, he's a little bit older than these other guys. He's about 25 years old, so he's more fundamentally sound. But he also has the agility and held his own very well. So I think he's the guy, if anybody, to me, And again, you know, left tackles don't grow on trees.
No, they do not.
You know, the odds of him being around when the Giants select are probably slim to none. Same thing with Cam Robinson, where I think he's getting a lot of flack in the media. People are poking holes in the flaws in his game.
More of a right tackle, do you agree with that?
Well, you know, watch the game against Myles Garrett. I think he held his own, so maybe there's a chance he can eventually play left tackle. If he was to be there for the Giants and they were to draft him, I would say that he would compete with Ereck Flowers for that starting position.
Okay.
So, you know, I think Cam Robinson probably not getting as enough credit that he deserves. I think, you know, if you take a look at his body of work, it is up there with the top tackles in this class. The Wisconsin Whitewater kid, you know, he just had a procedure on his hip.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out right now. Well, the NFL teams are going to find out what the medical status is on that.
And offensive line, by the way, getting measured today, and they're getting all their medical stuff done today, too.
And that was the other thing he took away from Coach was, you know, how important the medical check and the interview process was. Garcia, you know, I was waiting for him to stand out at the Senior Bowl. Didn't really do it for me in terms of being a day one, a top 50 type of selection.
He did weigh in at 300 pounds today, which I know for some people that's important, because he played at 280, 285 most of the year, right?
Right. Well, the thing is now he's got to maintain it.
Well, right.
Yeah, we've seen him with Ali Marpet, you know, 3,000 calories a day. You got to maintain that weight now. But, you know, some guys here in the middle rounds, maybe a guy like Julian Davenport out of Bucknell, 88-inch wingspan. This guy's a condor, developmental guy. Taylor Moten from Western Michigan, a developmental guy that maybe you can groom to be a starting tackle. But I think really when the Giants address that offensive line, they're going to have to look at free agency, maybe a Russell Okung, maybe Andrew Whitworth, maybe a Larry Warford, and then maybe, you know, plug some of these guys and fill these holes in the middle rounds.
One more quick follow-up on the offensive line before we move on to a different position. If these same offensive tackles were coming out, say, last year, the year before, when it was a deeper offensive tackle draft class, are we talking day two picks?
I think
so. Or can some of these guys sneak into the first round still, you think?
I think so. They're the the most dressed up girls at the prom this year. So, you know, I would think so. I think if you were to take these guys in last year's draft, they would probably be second round picks. But if I were to put the marbles in on one basket, pick one guy, Garrett Bowles from Utah, to me, stands out above the rest.
Very good. All right, another spot the Giants would be looking for is the tight end position. David Njoku and O.J. Howard, obviously the two guys that most people believe will be first-round selections. I talked to Jeff Risden last week from Real GM, does a good job covering the draft, and he thinks once we get through the combine and these guys blow it up in workouts this weekend, they'll both be gone in the top 20. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you think one of them might be sitting there for the Giants at 23?
For me, O.J. Howard's a top 10 player in this draft, maybe top five. I really think he's going to come in and just be, if not the best tight end, one of the top tight ends in the league. And really, you take a look at Baltimore, where they're picking. They need an offensive weapon. Ozzie Newsome can identify a great tight end as good as anybody. So I can't see O.J. Howard sliding past them. And Njoku, I mean, again, another physical specimen here. Probably is going to jump through the gymnasium here at the combine. But, you know, there's some guys here that I would maybe just take a wait-and-see approach, because the tight end class is so talented. Evan Engram is a guy. You know, he's an underrated blocker as well.
So you can find someone you think in round 3, 4, 5 that can be an impact player. Maybe not start right away, but play a role right away.
What about Jordan Leggett out of Clemson? Jeremy Sprinkle out of Arkansas? I mean, these guys are not too far off from being, you know, starting players, plug-and-play guys. And I think even Jake Butt is a guy that would be in the first-round conversation.
The medical stuff for him very
important,
obviously.
Right, if not for the injury.
Right.
So I think especially when you take a look at what the Giants need, I really wasn't a big fan of how they abandoned the fullback position last year. And I seen them, you know, they take Will Time, move him in motion into the backfield and make him a fullback. And I don't know. Larry Donnell's not coming back. Will Tye is more of a pass-catching tight end. Adams is a wait-and-see type of approach. So I think they need a tight end. If they are going to choose a tight end, they need to get a guy that has some blocking abilities.
Big wide receiver to complement Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham Jr., two very good receivers, but smaller guys. Maybe not a first-round pick, but who are some of the bigger-bodied wideouts you like in the middle of this draft?
Bigger-bodied wideouts.
Mike Williams obviously could be a first-round pick. Be a first-round pick, obviously.
Yeah, I think Mike Williams is the guy there.
And he's a big boy.
And, you know, he is a big boy. You know, in terms of height coming off the board early, you know, I'm not sure there's any guys that stand out. I think in terms of value guys that are not being talked about in the first round that might creep into that conversation after the combine would be a KD Cannon from Baylor.
Okay.
I think he's a candidate to run the fastest 40-yard dash. Chad Hansen from California has some wheels. I think he's a guy that could possibly sneak into the first round because you take a look at John Ross and Corey Davis. Again, there's injury concerns there. So could a guy like a Chad Hansen creep into the first round conversation after blowing up the combine? So those are some guys that I would probably be on the lookout there.
Okay, I want to swap quickly now to the defensive side of the ball. Do you agree that defensive end prospects and cornerback prospects, the classes are so deep that it's similar to the DT position last year where you get to the middle of the third round. On a normal year, you might be getting a guy that would be an early second round pick.
Yeah, no, I think no doubt about it. You take a look at a guy like Tack McKinley from UCLA. He's a guy that's probably going to slide now, and he would have been top half of the first round. And
wow.
You could maybe get him in the early second now.
Especially shoulder surgery for him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, UCLA, he's going to be out about 5-6 months, similar to the Shaq Lawson situation a year ago. You know, some of the other guys out there, we have – drawing blanks. What are we talking? Defensive ends.
Yeah, defensive end. Pass
defensive
rushers,
ends, yeah.
Yeah,
pass rushers. We got guys.
And corners,
yeah. Well, the cornerback position is really deep, really talented. I like the Florida guys up top, Quincy Wilson, Tease Tabor. Probably Marshawn Lattimore is going to be the first one off the board if I were to pick. And then, you know, you have guys like Sidney Jones from Washington, I think is a first-round selection. Guys like the Michigan kid, Jordan Lewis, who he measured in at 5'10" at the Senior Bowl. We expected him to be kind of a slot nickel type of corner. I think he can even play the outside now. So love the cornerback depth. The pass rushers, I think, you know, when you take a look at them, they're mostly, you know, hand in the dirt guys, a couple guys that can stand outside and maybe convert over to outside linebackers, but a lot of 4-3 defensive ends.
Wow, usually you don't have those coming out of college these days, mostly undersized, you know, DNs that play outside linebacker and rush without having their hand in the dirt. All right, Rick, let's take a couple calls, and I'll ask a couple questions as we move along as well. Draft questions only on this caller segment, folks. Rick's the draft guy. We're not going to do free agency and Giants right now. If you have draft questions, get on the line at 201-939-4513. So let's go to Kyle in New Jersey. He's up next. Kyle, how are you, buddy?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Kyle.
All right, so I just wanted to ask about finding Eli's successor in the draft.
Okay.
And who do you guys think would fit best to obviously back up Eli and then eventually become the starter?
Thank you, Kyle. And, you know, Rick, this is not a deep quarterback draft, you know, from what most people are saying. Even the guys at the top of the draft are developmental. Who do you like, if not a first-round pick, that a guy you can develop for 2 or 3 years and maybe down the road could be a successor to Mr. Manning?
Yeah, I probably don't see them going quarterback in the first two rounds. So those middle of the rounds, Gerard Evans, Virginia Tech, big-bodied quarterback, transfer from junior college, played 1 year with the head coach up there. He had Paxton Lynch as well. So, you know, the thing with him, he's more developmental guy. You're going to have to groom him, just like you mentioned. The quarterbacks here in this year's class, they're probably 2-3 years away from playing. But you take a look at what he brings to the table, the arm strength, the mobility in the pocket to move around, bide some time. Probably has to get better pocket presence. But when you take a look what he did in 1 year, he came in 4,000 passing yards, 30-40 touchdowns, just winging it and flinging it all over the field. I mean, really, it was somewhat reminiscent of what Cam Newton did, and he didn't really receive the hype and the publicity and, you know, a couple inches shorter than Cam. But I think, you know, when you take a look at his body of work, albeit short, just like Mitch Trubisky, you got to like what you see. And I think that's a guy that could maybe long-term be a Dak Prescott.
How high do you think Mahomes is going to go? Obviously, you play in a spread offense. That's a big adjustment to the NFL, but all the physical traits and ability is there. How much do you think one team is going to fall in love to the point where they say, you know what, I'm desperate here. I'm picking him, you know, early second round, trading up late first to pick this kid because of his raw physical skills, or is he going to drop into the late day two?
Well, it only takes one.
Exactly. That's why I asked the question.
So, you know, the one the one dumb owner rule, the one dumb GM rule, the one head coach rule. I don't think Mahomes is an NFL quarterback, in my opinion.
And why is that? Because a lot of people love him to death, which is I'm curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of work that needs to be done when you talk about just from the play calling, from being in the huddle and as opposed to looking at the sideline, being the leader of men, working from under the snap, working on your footwork. Also, the arm delivery, you know, I know it works. We've seen guys succeed with it, but Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers are the anomaly, right?
They're the exception to the
rule. You
know,
I mean,
right.
Not everybody's coming in here and, you know, changing up their arm angles, which I think he has some of that. And I think, you know, when you take a look at Patrick Mahomes and that air raid attack is going to be the label that he's fighting, right? So, you know, what do you do with him? Do you put him under center? Do you cater the offense around him? Because that RPO is slowly creeping into the NFL. I mean,
it is a little bit.
You know, I look at what they did in Tennessee with Marcus Mariota, and I think they played to his strengths wonderfully. So I think you have to, same thing with Deshaun Watson, you have to figure out, kind of like when Jim Mora Jr. had him in Atlanta, are you going to force him to be that pocket passer guy, or are you going to let him improvise where he's at his best and can make some plays? And, you know, that's where Mike Vick was at his best, but it also was where it got him injured.
Right, and it really is a tough balance to try to find. Let's go to Big down in Trenton. Big wants to talk about the NFL draft. What's going on, Big?
Hey, how you doing, John?
Doing well. What's on your mind, man?
I just had to ask a question about a three technique next to Snacks. I want to know about, like, Johnson from Iowa and or, like, a Montavis Adams from Auburn. Like, would they be good three techniques?
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I think you could definitely plug either one of those guys in there. And Montravius Adams, I love. I mean, you talk about what he did at the Senior Bowl, I thought was really underrated. I didn't hear much of a buzz. I thought he performed very well and very similar size to a Jonathan Hankins. So you plug him next to Damon Harrison, and again, I think you're rolling with that 700 pounds of beef in, up the middle. And Jaleel Johnson's a guy, also had an impressive Senior Bowl, but little undersized, little short in stature, which I think might hurt his draft stock a little bit. If he was an inch or two taller, you could be potentially looking at a first-round talent. But, you know, the height, I think, knocks him back maybe into that middle second round.
Is the DT class, you think, a little bit down this year after having such a large number of really good prospects in last year's class?
Up top it is, but I think the depth is good. You can get quality players, quality backups, rotational guys, future starters, guys you can groom. A couple defensive tackles, you know, that we had down at the College Gridiron Showcase weren't even invited here at the NFL Scouting Combine. A guy like Shakir Soto out of Pittsburgh, where head coach Pat Narduzzi asked him to bulk up 50 pounds heading into the season. This guy is a terror, and he's not here in Indianapolis, and he should be.
Who's your one guy that's going to blow up the combine this weekend?
Haseem Reddick. I mean, this guy is going to really leave here. The buzz in my hotel room was so loud last night I couldn't sleep because the Haseem Reddick buzz. Man, this guy is going to come out
what
here.
What drills?
Everything. This guy is going to probably, if he ran a 4.440, it wouldn't surprise me, John.
Really?
And I think that he's going to have close to 38-inch vertical would be my guess, and maybe a 10, 11-foot broad jump. This guy's going to put up measurables that are close to running back and wide receivers, and I think that his momentum off of the Senior Bowl and then off of the combine, I believe he'll be a top 16 overall pick.
All right, I've been told I should ask everybody here that comes who they think the Giants are going to wind up with at the 23rd pick in the first round. It's obviously ridiculously early, but what is your prediction?
Well, we were talking pass rushers. I was shooting blanks earlier, but Derek Barnett would be the guy for me. If he's available for the Giants, I'd be doing cartwheels up to the podium. I mean, this guy, and there's a guy there's mixed opinions about, and I'm not sure why. Because I see a guy that can bully you. He can dip and rip, get under you. He could even pull out the spin move on you. I mean, this guy's pass rush repertoire is, like, unbelievable. 3 years in a row of 10-plus sacks in the SEC, the only player in history.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So if that guy's here, I'm doing backflips to the podium for Derek Barnett, Tennessee.
Rick, great stuff.
Hey, thanks,
appreciate
Sean.
It. Rick Saratella, founder, NFL Draft Bible, the relaunching. Make sure you check it out. Plenty more coming up on Big Blue Kickoff Live from Indianapolis when we return. Thanks, Rick.
I love giving back. Back home, I've seen a lot of poverty, and, you know, I just feel like that's our duty as professionals. when we get to this level is to give back.
Call me Chef Boy OD.
Not everybody gets this opportunity, and you always want to show the outcome of the opportunity by giving back.
That's good.
We're back here in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk with you. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's take some calls here. We'll have Jenny Ventress joining us in about 15 minutes from SI and MMQB.com. So as you call in, we'll get you up here. Again, 201-939-4513. Let me take a look at Twitter. We got a bunch of tweets coming in about the Combine and the draft. We'll try to get to them as we move forward. Here we go. This from @easy_BKNY. Is not having Mixon at the Combine good or bad for his draft, Scott, draft stock? I think it helps him and wish he was here. Well, here's the thing. And the NFL obviously made that decision, not having Mixon and Kelly at the Combine. And, you know, I think considering what the NFL is trying to stand for, I understand why they did what they did, and I get it. But I think the good thing about the Combine is that you use it to find information about players. So I don't think it can help a player not being at the Combine, but he'll have his pro day, and he'll have plenty of opportunities moving forward to make good impressions on other teams and the coaches to try to make a play to become a real good guy in the NFL. And a lot of people think he is first-round talent, so it'll be interesting to see where he lands given his off-the-field issues. All right, back to the calls. Let's go over the Atlantic to England and say hello to Jay. Hi, Jay. How you doing?
Hey. Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Doing great, Jay. What's on your mind, my man?
So, listen, I went back and I watched, and I used to watch, whenever I had time, I used to watch a lot of Combine tape.
Yeah.
I recorded, and I'll just kind of review the players that I wanted to see on the Giants pick, which is why I kind of stopped doing it, because I would make this list, and the Giants would just stay away from the players that I make a list of. And I know one of the guys that was on my list was Tyler Eifert when he was coming out. He was one of the best graded tight ends I've seen in a long time.
Right.
That's another story. Eric Flowers. So I went back and I watched the tape on Eric Flowers at the Combine. And one thing I've noticed with Eric Flowers in his drills to what we see right now is he does not raise his hand when he's pivoting back to getting to his position to block for the quarterback. And he does that a lot now. I don't know if the Giants felt that he's still graded high and they'll pick him to something that we could work on, but I feel like that's like fundamental stuff that as an old lineman, you're taught at maybe Pop Warner or at least at the most at high school varsity. You're taught to always put your hands up, especially when you're pivoting back or you're dropping back into blocking. I just want to see, like, what do you think about that? And going forward, what type of O-lineman that you think the Giants should look forward to in this draft?
Well, Jay, I got to give you credit because I think you kind of hit it right on the head. And if you listen and you watch David Deal and Sean O'Hara on a lot of our programming this year, you've seen them talk about his technique. And the phrase David Deal likes to use is being a boxer versus being a gunslinger. And, you know, the boxer has their hands up here and they're ready to block, and that's good hand placement. The gunslinger, like you said, has their hands out at their sides like this, and they bring them up. And at that point, they're too wide and you're too late and you don't get into good position to block. So I think you hit it on the head. When you want to see where you want to see Eric Flowers get better, and it is in his technique, and a lot of that is where he has his hands before he engages the blocker. So I think that's a really good point by you, and I think that's pretty astute watching the film by you as you move into the Combine and you move into the NFL draft as the Giants try to find somebody to replace him. And we've talked about this all offseason. The challenge in trying to replace your left tackle is that there are not a lot of left tackles out there. They don't grow on trees. There aren't a ton in the draft this year. You heard from a couple of our draft guys earlier today already that the first-round pick offensive tackles this year in a normal year in a stronger draft class would probably be second- or third-round pick. So that's something you have to keep an eye on moving forward. And then when it comes to free agency, a lot of times teams don't allow their starting left tackles to even reach free agency. So the guys that are out there, you'll find the best one you can. You bring him in, see if he can help, and see what makes sense based on what the Giants have. I will say this. One more thing on the offensive line, and Tom Rock pointed this out too. Competition's a good thing. You want to have competition. You want to have players pushing other players to earn their spots. And I think that'll be a big feature on the offensive line this year, competition to see what guys can earn what roles on this offensive line. 201-939-4513. Let's go out to Richie. He's on Long Island. He joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Richie. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking forward to these next coming days that you have at the Combine.
Appreciate it.
Really, you know, a lot of information coming in.
Thank you.
One question that if you can ask, you know, your other guest that you're going to bring on.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, you know, the only fullback that we have in free agency is Will Johnson. And, you know, if you can ask the other, you know, people that you're going to have on your program, you know, is there any late rounds or undrafted guys that, you know, the Giants maybe could pick for to compete with Will Johnson at fullback or, you know, the H-back kind of position role? I haven't heard too much of that.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Actually, Ben McAdoo was asked about that, Rich, too, during his press conference. And, you know, he didn't say that the team doesn't want a fullback. He basically said that their two fullback options last year, Will Johnson and Nikita Whitlock, both got hurt. So they had to make do without those two guys over the course of the year, which is obviously was a challenge, and they tried to figure it out as they went along. Another thing to note, too, in free agency, some of the best blocking fullbacks are actually free agents this year. So the Giants might be able to make a move for a veteran, too, if they decide to bring in a traditional fullback. Now, the other option, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, you do have those tight ends that play that H-back role that can do both. And I think you'd like to try to find somebody that is probably a more consistent lead blocker than Will Ty. If he comes out of the backfield in formations like that and, you know, traditional, you know, 21 type of formation plays with two running backs and one tight end. So you want to be able to figure out who fits best in that role. Because if you're picking a receiving tight end, you don't want him doing that stuff. It's not going to work. It's not going to help your running game. So I think it'll be interesting to see, Richie, whether or not in free agency or the draft they find somebody that can fit that role. Because let's be honest, in college these days, how often do you see a fullback lined up in the backfield? You just don't see fullbacks
all,
in college football.
Mostly receiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
very rarely you see that. It's a mostly receiving tight end.
And I think,
but, you know, just something I was thinking about, you know, if there's anybody if in the later rounds or, you know, undrafted free agents that people would see fitting that kind of a role, even though it's, I know it's a very diminished role in college these days. But, yeah, that's all I had. You know, enjoy your experience over there and really look forward to listening in the next couple of days. Thank you.
Thanks, Richie. Appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Can try to squeeze in a couple more calls before we get to Jenny Ventress, who will be joining us in about 5 to 10 minutes right here on Giants.com. And we go back to the tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. These two comments are kind of linked a little bit. At JMF8013, the Jets could let go of Brandon Marshall because of salary. Good fit for the G-man because he's a bigger wide receiver. Ben Gruen points out, at Gruen Ben, Eli put the 2011 team on his back with Nix, Cruz, and Manningham. He doesn't need a receiver that's 6'5". Just protect him better. And, Ben, I think you make a good point. While I think it's nice to have a bigger wide receiver, I don't think it's essential. I think it's more important to have good wide receivers. You don't have to have a giant out there, especially if you find a bigger tight end that can be that type of possession receiver that can do work in the middle of the field. So I think you make a good point that while having that size and wide receiver is important and it's nice, I don't think it's necessarily essential to make that happen as you move forward here and you look for free agents. You'd rather have better players than just get somebody because they're necessarily large. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone. Sarah's in Verona. Sarah's up next on Giants.com. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, John. What's going on?
What's up?
I love the show.
Thank you.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to talk about Romeo Okwara. How do you think he fits into the D-line this season, and do you think he can be a real contributor?
Yeah, you know, and I think they need him to be too, Sarah. I really do. Last year, JPP, and it looks like he'll be back in some way, shape, or form since the Giants have franchised him, and Olivier Vernon, when JPP was active the first 12 games and Vernon was there too, those guys played 90-plus percent of the snaps at defensive end. That's something that the Giants have to get away from this year. You want to rotate guys more. Steve Spagnuolo likes rotating guys. And as they move guys around, and I think the draft is another place you can find some defensive ends and pass rushers. It's a very deep class at that spot. You want to see Romeo Okwara get to the point where the coaching staff trusts him So you can take Olivier Vernon off the field. You can take Jason Pierre-Paul off the field, and you can put him in there and not lose a whole lot. And frankly, I think Okwara did a pretty good job the final four games of last season when JPP was out. Did you notice his absence? Sure. But I don't think you went through a game and afterwards you said, boy, we really, 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 really missed JPP here. That was a gaping hole on that side of the defensive line, and it was a disaster. That didn't happen because of the job Okwara did. He was solid. He did what the team needed him to do, and he really stepped up as an undrafted rookie and did a very, very good job. 201-939-4513 will continue to take your calls. Another tweet, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated will be joining us in just a second right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Let's go to at W-E-H, I click. When we draft Dalvin Cook, who do you think we'll play against in the Super Bowl? And we've had this debate on Twitter, so I'll make my point here online as we move forward here. I don't think it's necessary. Look, I think Dalvin Cook's a great player. I really do. I think he's going to be a fine pro. But that being said, do you really think, considering the job Paul Perkins has done, that you want to draft a running back in the first round and throw him aside? Because if you draft a running back in the first round, you're looking at a guy that you're going to want to give the ball to for 20 to 25 carries in a game. So that's something you have to keep in mind. When we come back, Jenny Ventures from Sports Illustrated will join us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Hang with us.
I feel like we are setting the example for the next generation. It's important for us as football players to recognize that we are in the public eye, grab that responsibility by the horn, and put ourselves out there and set a great example for the next generation.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com, and now we're joined by senior writer for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB, Jenny Ventress. Jenny, great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And you have a whole crew out here. I saw Emily Kaplan here. You got Albert Breer here. You guys bring the heat for the combine, huh?
We're well-staffed. That is very true.
All right, let's get into it. You've been listening to coaches and GMs all day at the podiums that are really right behind our stage here. What's the feel right now as the league year begins in a little bit, as guys get franchised? Do you expect anything else to happen for the remainder of the day in terms of guys getting franchised with that deadline, I believe at 4 o'clock this afternoon?
Yeah, it seems like most of the situations are settled.
Yeah.
You know, the Browns seem like they're, you know, not going to do that with Terrell Pryor, and they'll just move forward and try to figure out if they have him, and if not, they don't. And so it seems like most of those situations are settled as of now.
Are you surprised that the Browns, given all their salary cap, and look, they're not going to be able to spend all that money this year if they tried.
Right,
are you surprised
right.
just to maintain Pryor for a year, they didn't decide to throw the tag on him?
A little surprised, but they must feel like they can still be able to keep him with a long-term deal, so...
How many of these deals and these franchise tags do you think will eventually wind up in long-term deals, and what guys do you think might end up playing on their tags?
Yeah, it's a good question because every year, you know, the ideal situation in most teams is to sign them to a long-term deal and not
right.
have the year, you know, the salary cap hit. I mean, I think Jason Pierre-Paul is one of the more interesting ones because, you know, maybe they just have him play on the tag. I mean, I think that's a possibility. Now, certainly, you know, the three previous times the Giants have tagged a player, we know two of them led to long-term deals,
right.
and the third would have had Pierre-Paul not had the fireworks accident. So, but, you know, do you have the space, you know, do you have the space long-term to sign to a deal like Olivier Vernon, or do you just have him for 1 year and kind of figure that makes more sense with the risk-reward with injuries and age and everything to play on the one-year tag. So I think that's probably one of the more interesting situations.
Yeah, and I imagine both JPP and the Giants would want to try to get something done as soon as possible to get that cap number down so they have more flexibility next Wednesday.
Right, because right now it's taking up around 50% of the available cap space, I think. So, you know, it would make sense to try to get something done, but, you know. And obviously Pierre-Paul has said that he didn't want to be playing under the tag this year. So,
yeah, we'll see what happens. And obviously both sides would like to work that out. But, of course, it takes two to tango, and you have to figure out an agreement that works. This free agent market, last year we saw it come out, and it came fast, it came furious, and the dollars were flying. Do you think it's going to be similar this year, or do you think it's going to be a little bit slower?
I think it might be a little slower. I mean, I think one thing is with the quarterback situations – Brock Osweiler's contract last year, I think will give some general managers pause. You know, you dole out all this money and the quarterback doesn't work out. So does that kind of temper the quarterback market this year? It's possible. But then again, teams get desperate. They don't have another solution at that position. So, you know, now there's reports that Jimmy Garoppolo would not be traded for any price. So that does that drive up, you know, the markets of other guys? You know, it's a good question, but I think, you know, certainly Osweiler is a cautionary tale that's going to be on the minds. Do you devote all this money to a guy that has a limited reel of experience and you're not exactly sure by the time free agency opens, you know, do you have a deal in place with a guy that, you know, you don't know is going to be the answer just because you need something beyond what you currently have? I think it's going to be tough for a lot of teams.
And Peter King from MMQB had a great article last week about Tony Romo and what the Cowboys might decide to do with him. Are they going to be able to find a trade partner? To me, the inevitable result of all this is going to be him getting released, and he's going to end up picking the place where he's going to go.
I agree, and I think that makes the most sense just if you look at the situation overall and his relationship with Jerry Jones. And, you know, I think ultimately he is released. You know, if they were able to find a trade partner, I think it's possible they could, but, you know.
The cap, it just makes it so tough, right?
It does, but then again, I mean, it's not really that out of whack with what quarterbacks are getting paid. So,
sure.
If you know, if you need one and you have a chance to get Romo for a couple years, you know, I don't know that it's prohibitive, but I still think it ends up with him being released and picking where he wants to go.
What do you think his preferred landing spots would be? And I think the two that have been mentioned, and they do make sense, Houston, Denver.
Right, and certainly Vance Joseph's comments this morning about...
Oh, what did he say? I didn't hear it.
He just kind of, you know, he said he didn't want to talk... There's no one that he could talk about because he doesn't want to talk about players and other rosters, which is sort of like, is he hinting at, you know.
That's code. Yeah.
Is that code for, you know, we'd be interested in Romo? I mean, certainly we've seen the Broncos do this before with the Peyton Manning sweepstakes. You know, they had Tim Tebow. They go to the playoffs, and then Elway lands Peyton Manning. So, you know, are they comfortable with Simeon and Paxton Lynch? I'm not so sure that they are because, you know, I think they feel like they've got this defense that can win championships, and they need more at the position. So, I certainly think they're a leading contender. I know the Texans have also been mentioned. I mean, those two situations seem to make a lot of sense.
And, of course, the happiest people in the world that Garoppolo might not get traded are probably the quarterbacks coming out in this draft because it gives one fewer options for teams like the 49ers, teams like the Browns that need a quarterback to solve that issue before the draft gets here.
Right, and certainly, you know, at this point in time, you know, the report comes out today, and there's been speculation that the Patriots might try to hang on to him, but it's a pretty strong report from ESPN. You know, Adam Schefter saying that at no price will the Patriots trade Garoppolo. So
which is amazing when
you
think about how willing Bill Belichick is to trade good players for picks. I mean, he just traded Jamie Collins in a year where they went to the Super Bowl.
Right, and so he obviously thinks that the greatest value to them is, you know, keeping Garoppolo. Like, his greatest value is being on their roster in case something were to happen to Brady. Now, you know, if someone... I think they'll still listen to offers. I mean,
right.
They'd be silly not to. And certainly the Browns have a lot to give and could make an extremely strong offer if they felt like, which, you know, I believe they like Garoppolo. I believe they would even go double down on quarterbacks this offseason. You know, if they could trade for Garoppolo and draft someone high, I could see them doing that because that's how dire it is. You know, they feel like they have a good coaching staff. They feel like they have a plan in place. But none of that works if you don't have talent, especially at the – most important position on the roster.
Last year, the Giants set the mark in a lot of ways with their early free agent signings on the defensive side of the ball. Who do you think are going to be the guys in free agency this year that get those big deals that you think will set the market moving forward for the rest of the group?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, you know, the Browns have a ton of cap space,
yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure exactly, you know, they've got to figure out the quarterback situation. That's the most important thing to them, but they certainly have a lot of money to spend, you know. I think, you know, there's a lot of teams that have – this year, there's teams that have as much cap space as there used to be, you know, your entire salary cap was. I mean,
yeah.
There are teams around $100 million cap space. Think about that. A few years ago, that was the entirety of almost of a team's salary cap. So there is a potential for big spending. But, again, like, I think, you know, big spending at the quarterback position might be tempered a little bit. Or at least I think that market might be slower to develop than it had been in past years. You know, maybe it takes a little bit more time. Maybe teams don't go all in on deals before they meet the players. Maybe they spend a little. I mean, I don't know if the market will bear that, but I think there are a lot of GMs that are more gun-shy.
What players do you think are going to be the most highly sought-after guys when we get to the free agency period next week?
Well, we have, you know, a lot of Dante Hightower is an interesting situation with New England. you know, he obviously made such a crucial play in the Super Bowl, and are they able to hang on to him? You know, obviously, Adrian Peterson is certainly he's later in his career. We're not talking like huge bucks here, but that's one of the more intriguing free agents out there, just because, you know, do the Vikings end up making an offer? Most likely, he probably goes somewhere else. I mean, him and Jamal Charles, I think they're both these backs that have been wildly productive in their career, and now, and you know, I think, but you know, obviously. You know, and then Mike Glennon's another one in the quarterback category that would probably draw more interest if Garoppolo really is out of it.
How do teams view him? Because he's had so little time on the field, and ironically, his time on the field came when he was younger. Now he's gotten older. How much has he progressed, but he hasn't been on the field? How do teams view a guy like that?
Yeah, and I think that's
tough.
It's tough to assess someone like that, because you think they might have the physical tools and you think they might have the, you know, all of the attributes. But we were, like, again, not to bring it up again.
Like,
but
Brock Osweiler.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of mixed feelings, and I think it's hard to fall in love with a guy like that. But if is better than options that you have. Like, if you're a team like the Jets, for instance, I mean – they could make a play for him, because what are their options there?
How much do you think Alshon Jeffrey's injury history is going to scare teams away, or are people going to fall in love with the year he had 2 years ago in his 6'5 frame?
Yeah, he's probably one of the biggest names this year. I mean, he's going to get mega money, because, you know, even though you see the injury history, you think he's still a unique talent, and a lot of teams are really craving, you know, they need that position in their offense to make it work. So I think he'll certainly get overpaid.
Offensive line class, and obviously that's something the Giants will be taking a very long look at, both in the draft and free agency. We know the draft class probably isn't all that strong. Free agency, Russell Okung got let go. He'll be around. Andre Whitworth is a pending free agent for the Bengals. How do you view this offensive line class, and how heavy do you think the bidding is going to be? Because, Jenny, as you know, finding good offensive linemen in this league is hard now. It's one of those positions that there just aren't a lot of really good players.
Yeah, and there are a lot of options in free agency, and I think, you know, all those guys that you mentioned are, you know, they're going to command a big market, because, you know, I always say that there's quarterback and edge rusher are the two most important positions. But then, you know, that the guy that matches up against the edge rusher is your left tackle. So, you know, I think there's a lot of teams that have a need there. And I think there's more teams that have a need than good linemen that are on the market.
Do you think the Giants will be able to find, at the very least, good competition for Eric Flowers at that left tackle spot before they get to the draft, so they're not sitting there with a big hole where they're saying, boy, we have to draft somebody here to maybe compete at left tackle?
I think they have to get something in free agency. They have to bring in competition. Sure, you could do that during the draft, but the miss rate for linemen high in the draft is pretty high. You know, my boss, Peter King, kind of detailed it in Monday's column, kind of comparing the quarterback miss rate at the top of the first round versus a lineman, and there's been – you could argue more misses at linemen.
A higher percentage, absolutely.
Higher percentage misses, because it's so hard to know. I mean, and is that because they're coming from these spread offenses, maybe, or are teams not putting an emphasis on the most important attributes for the transition to the pro level, such as, you know, mental, like, acuity and how fast you process things? I'm not sure what it is, but there's been a lot of misses there. So I think you have to find another option in free agency.
How does the NFL view collegians coming out now? Because you watch an NFL game, you watch a college game. I'm not going to say they're different sports, but the way the approach of offenses are now is so different. Yeah. Are organizations finding it more and more difficult to evaluate some of these players coming out? Because in a lot of ways, they're asking them to do things that they were never asked to do on the college level, especially when it comes to positions like offensive line and tight end.
Yeah, it's a lot of the times it's way more of a projection than ever before. And I heard Steelers GM Kevin Colbert was saying, outside linebacker, for instance, that's a huge projection. And, you know, he said a lot of times they find themselves just ruling guys out as the process goes along, because they say there's no way in a 3-4 system they can adequately play outside linebacker, or we just don't know that they can play. It's too much of a projection. So I think there's a lot of positions like that where it's a huge projection, and that's why we're seeing a lot of misses, you know, everywhere from, you know, it's unusual to get a quarterback or a lineman from a pro-ready offense.
Yeah, there aren't many Alabamas out there that are, you know, they got some Big Ten schools that do it. Wisconsin still runs some pro stuff. In general, a couple more before we say goodbye. Jenny Ventress, SI.com and MMQB. What's the general sense you get from front offices about this free agent class, the noise you're hearing, and some themes you think we're going to run into when the league year opens for business next week?
Well, you know, I'm not sure trying to think of what the themes would be. I mean, I think that there's certainly some guys that are going to get overpaid, as we see every year. And I think because of the cap space is so big, it's the same thing we saw last year. There's going to be teams that are going to really have a need, and they're going to commit a lot of money at big positions. And I think there's, you know, a lot of guys who are kind of free right now that either they weren't tagged and they could have been tagged, or, you know, in teams that were hoping to work out deals with them. There's a lot of big name players that we just don't know exactly if they'll stay with the team that they're on, or after they were not tagged, or if they'll end up somewhere else.
Yeah, and I should ask you about one player that Giant fans hope don't wind up somewhere else, and that's Jonathan Hankins, who's going to hit free agency next week. What do you think the market's going to be like for him when free agency opens? Is he going to be one of the first guys that teams target?
I think, you know, he's probably going to be in the first few days, because I think, you know, players like that fit in a lot of defenses, but he really fits in the Giants defense, and so he was, you know, he's certainly important to what they want to do up front. So, you know, it's like, it's hard with those things, because you make a decision, you know, you have to hold on to Jason Pierre-Paul, so they franchise tag him, and then you can't hold on to every guy, so you kind of have to make tough decisions about prioritizing, but he's certainly someone that really is a key piece.
Jenny, great stuff.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You can check her workout on mmqbnsi.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll have more from Indianapolis live at the Combine when we come back on Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. Stay with us.
I know I was put in this position for a reason. That's why I have such a passion for kids, because I know the influence I could have on them, and any opportunity I have to give back, to interact with the youth and with people all around is a great opportunity.
That was a good play. Good work, man. Ha!
I love giving back. Back home, I've seen a lot of poverty, and, you know, I just feel like that's our duty as professionals. When we get to this level, is to give back.
Call me Chef Boyle D.
Not everybody gets this opportunity, and you always want to show the outcome of the opportunity by giving back.
That's good.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. John Schmelk with you, 201-939-4513. We're going to wrap up the show with Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. He should be joining us in just a couple minutes right here on set from Indianapolis on Giants.com. He'll take us the rest of the way. But for now, why don't we do a couple more calls as you wait for Mike, and let's go out to Columbia, Maryland, and say hello to our good friend Len. Len, good afternoon. How are you, buddy?
Hey, John.
How are you doing?
Good. I want to make sure, are we connected?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Len. Sounds great.
Okay. I'm having a little trouble hearing you, so maybe we won't stay on too long. You know, good interview with Jenny. She's really good.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to comment on one of the questions you asked her is, you know, who's going to go quickly in this free agency thing? And, man, the defensive tackle for the Ravens, Brandon Williams. He's going to fly off that board, and he's going to fly off quick. And the money, I mean, it's going to be snacks money. That guy, I get a chance to watch a lot of Ravens games down here, and he's really good. He's really good. I think he goes, probably gets overpaid, unless the Ravens do something by 4 o'clock. But it doesn't look like they're going to franchise him. Hey, quick question on the calendar, John.
Yeah.
Is there a date by which the Giants can't rescind the offer to JPP?
You know what? That is a great question. That's a good question, Len. I know there's a date in which, if they haven't signed a long-term deal, and that's in the middle of July, he has to then play on the one-year tender on the franchise tag. And I do not believe once you get to July 14th, that the team is allowed to rescind the tag. I will double-check that. I'm not absolutely 100% positive, but I believe that is the rule.
Okay. One last thing, and you can hear me better than I can hear you, John, for whatever the reason. But just let me mention, of course, I hope we get JPP under a long-term contract, and I think the Giants are going to work toward that. I think JPP wants that. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, John, and when we get past July 15th, I could see this guy sitting there to the Saturday, you know, the Saturday before Labor Day, right before the season, skipping all the camps, skipping training camp, Now, maybe that's not the worst thing. You don't risk, you know, you don't risk injury, but I think there'll be a lot of adverse publicity if that happens. Let's really try to get this guy under contract if we can. Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Have a good time in Indy.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you, pal. 201-939-4513. I do not see a rule here in terms of when teams can rescind the tag. Obviously, once the player commits to signing it, you have to sign it. You can't rescind it then. But I don't see a date. I will see if I can track that down as we go through the remainder of the show. 201-939-4513. And again, I don't know what the rules in terms of date. You can rescind it, obviously, as late as July. That's what the Giants did with Jason Pierre-Paul a couple of years ago. But the question is there a limit after that when the team can no longer rescind the tag? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I will see if I can effort that and figure that out as we move forward. Couple things about this draft class that I think are interesting. We'll get more from Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus as we move forward on that, and we see what he thinks about this class. And they look at some of the metrics rather than, you know, game tape and evaluating athleticism. I think it gives us a different perspective. Well, with him today, well, Steve Palazzolo, he'll do a lot of the free agency stuff with Pro Football Focus tomorrow when he joins us on Giants.com. But the Giants do have a lot of work to do, and I think it's interesting when you take a look at, you know, the schedule with the draft and free agency as you move forward here. And, you know, I don't think teams like to sit there and wait until the draft to fill a hole. They like to do it in free agency because you never know what happens when you get to the draft and developing guys quickly enough to move them in to that lineup to play right away. So those are some things you have to worry about as you move forward into free agency. Free agency is used to fill holes, and then the draft, you pick the best available player, and you figure it out from there. Those are the things you look at when you're the Giants and you head into free agency. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus right here from the Combine Indianapolis on Giants.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys.
You guys can say hi. You
can too. I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it.
I can read in bed and in purple.
Luckily, I got both of my parents in my life, and they've always been there. But some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids and those type of people by giving them some words, giving them some knowledge, giving them some love, give them a hug, that's what it's all about.
The golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated. Respect people, show respect, listen to people, and treat them kindly.
I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
We're back here live from the Combine in Indianapolis right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke back with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and now we're joined by Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. Mike, it's good to see you. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
You know, you usually see Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson. Sam has been sequestered back in England, so he couldn't make it here. They will not let him back into the country, folks. So
I wouldn't either, but
that's okay. So we got Mike joining us. He's going to pinch hit for us today. And, Mike, you do a ton of work for PFF on the draft, so I think you're a good guy to talk about here. And I think you guys look at these prospects probably a little bit differently than everybody else. Why don't you, before we get into the draft class, talk about your methodology, how you guys evaluate these guys, and what you're looking for.
So our biggest thing is the grades that we have on these guys, the grades that we've collected over the course of the season through watching, you know, every play that they've played this year. Basically measure their production. And so that's kind of a different thing than what scouts are looking at. Scouts are looking at traits, not necessarily how many sacks you put up, how many hits you had, you know, how many yards you had as a wide receiver. They're looking at, do you have the speed, do you have the burst, do you have this athleticism that translates supposedly to the NFL, whereas we're kind of starting from a different angle where it's, you have the production now, do you have the trait secondary that will translate to the NFL with that production? So that's kind of our angle and how we're looking at it, and that's why our draft board usually looks a lot different from the national media's draft board.
Here's a question. When you go back the last couple years and you guys have done your draft boards, when all has been said and done, who are some of the guys that maybe you guys hit on and were like, wow, we really nailed this guy based on production. He was going to be really good, that maybe some of the national folks maybe were sleeping on a little bit.
Well, I think go back to the Super Bowl this year. We had Trey Flowers and Grady Jarrett as first-round picks. They ended up going in the fourth and fifth, respectively.
Wow.
We thought those guys were, you know, surefire just based on the production they had. Trey Flowers at Arkansas was dominating left tackles in the SEC, better than any other edge player in that class. And we just thought, you know, he might not have the juice off the ball, but he uses his hands so well, he's going to win at the NFL. And I think we've seen that with the Patriots. And then Grady Jarrett, he didn't look like a nose tackle in the NFL. He's only like 6 feet tall, 300 pounds. Doesn't have the girth and the size that you usually see out of a nose tackle. But we saw him holding the point of attack at runs there at Clemson. We saw him getting pressure like no other nose tackle we saw in that class. And we just thought, you know, that's at some point going to translate, even if he doesn't fit the mold of an NFL defensive tackle. So I go back to those two as two guys I think we've hit on that others didn't.
All right, so now let's take a look at this draft class. Do you agree with the general consensus that it's an extremely deep class at corner? I'll give you four positions, two on each side. Corner, D-end, running back, tight end.
Completely agree. All four. I think D-end, this is the year to grab one. It is so amazingly deep. There are seven or eight guys in this class that would have gone ahead of everyone after about Joey Bosa last year in the class. There would have been, I think you could draft eight to nine guys in the first round in this and not, you know, not be unhappy with who you're getting. There are legitimately that sort of talent.
I want to follow up on that real quick. A guy like Emmanuel Ogba, I think it's a teammate. Do you think they traded up to get him at the front end of the second round? Or maybe the Browns just picked him because they had the pick. Yeah. Where would Ogba, who was the, you know, first or second pick in the second round last year, land if he was in the draft class this year?
He'd be around the 13th, 14th best guy.
So third or fourth round pick.
Was he third edge that came off the board last year?
Yes.
Yeah, 13th, 14th. And that's like, wow, that's ridiculous. It's night and day. And I was saying, the guys that are seniors in this class have to be kicking themselves because last year they should have come out and you would have been, you know, you would have been a mid-first rounder. And now guys are going to get pushed down to the second round. But, yeah, it's incredibly deep. You can't go wrong with a number of guys in this class.
Who do you guys like specifically that jump out to you?
Well, I mean, obviously, Myles Garrett. And you can't dislike Myles Garrett just based on 3 years of incredible production and all the athletic tools. And one guy that I think we're higher on than the general public because of the production as well is Derek Barnett, the defensive end from Tennessee. We have him as a, you know, top 10 pick. I don't think he's going to end up going as a top 10 pick because of, like you said, we've talked about the athleticism concerns that they might have with him. He might not test amazingly here in Indianapolis this week. But his production was on par with Myles Garrett every single year. Same left tackles, same tackles in the SEC. He was beating them up. I really think he's going to be good in the NFL.
All right, so let's stick with some of these deep positions. How about corner? These corners coming out, and you guys do a great job of tracking whether or not they're playing zone or playing man. Mm-hmm. Are we getting a good mix of these corners coming out, or are we getting a lot of zone guys, a lot of man guys? What's the mix?
Well, I think it is a good mix. There are a lot of man guys right at the top of the draft. I think Marshon Lattimore is fantastic. He can basically do it. He's not really a man guy. He's a guy who can do it everything. And then you have some zone guys down in the second round, guys like Jordan Lewis, Desmond King, who have a little better feel for that sort of thing. So I think you're getting a good mix. Another guy I like is Marlon Humphrey, who plays very good in off-zone cover. So I think there is a good mix for any team. You know, what your sort of philosophy is as a defensive coach, you're going to find a guy that you can like.
And I mentioned the corners. I'll stick with the defensive backs. Very rarely do you see two safeties projected to go in the first round. You saw a back, I believe, Earl Thomas and Berry, I think, in the same draft, went in the top 10. And a lot of people thinking that's going to happen this year with Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker. And a lot of people think this safety class is stacked.
Yes, I think both of those guys that you mentioned are incredibly talented. Malik Hooker makes plays from the deep middle of the field that we just haven't seen a guy since Earl Thomas, basically. He is making plays from the middle all the way to the far sideline, going over deep routes, making plays that just college safeties don't make. He takes a lot of chances, though. I'm a little worried about that. You see him get beat by double moves and that sort of thing. So he's got to clean up some of that stuff. But he has rare physical tools that you just don't see in safeties. And my favorite guy is Jamal Adams. The LSU safety is so incredibly talented. He plays with such great balance. I legitimately think he could play cornerback in the NFL. He has that sort of Jalen Ramsey type, you know, ability to go between both. I think he's, if I'm taking one guy, it's him because he can basically do it all. Hooker's a little more limited to just basically that center field role.
And the way the NFL is now, if you can move that safety down into the slot when teams are changing personnel and you don't have to move guys around, that gives you an advantage right off the bat.
Yeah, safety is a Swiss Army knife for a lot of defensive coordinators in the NFL right now. I know the Giants like to use, they play a lot of cover four and a lot of cover six using Landon Collins in that sort of role. So They don't really need a safety at this time, but yeah, like that's the future of the NFL in safety position, I think.
Okay, let's switch to the other side of the ball where it's deep. Tight end position. That's a position the Giants yep. will likely be taking a very deep look at. I've talked to a couple different people now that they believe that O.J. Howard and Njoku might be top 20 picks. It might be gone by the time the Giants pick at 23. Do you think that's possible? And if so, where do you think that next level of tight ends come in terms of round and value?
Yeah, I think that definitely is possible. Both those guys are probably the most dynamic tight ends we've seen in a good while. Njoku is going to run some ridiculous numbers this week. The first time I ended up watching him, I thought he was a wide receiver there at Miami. I was like, oh, that's a nice slot receiver. No, that's a tight end.
They played him about 75% of the time in the slot, too.
And that's the thing. So I'm not sure he's a guy who's going to line up and block, but that's not what tight ends are asked to do much in the NFL anymore. But O.J. Howard, though, much more complete player. He can block. He can do it all in that regard. I have a little more questions with him about his receiving ability and what he can do after the catch. But he's a guy, if you're actually going to ask your tight end to block in line, you're going to like him. So I think they could be off the board. I don't think they end up being off the board when it's all said and done in the draft, just because there's so many other deep positions. That tight end's just not really a huge, it's not a hugely important position in the NFL. That it's great if you have a dynamic one, but not a lot of teams utilize it enough. So I think that they'll be one of those guys there. The second tier of guys like Evan Engram, Gerald Everett, Bucky Hodges, tight end from Virginia Tech, I think those guys are all second-round picks. I think they could be there when the Giants, go back around in the second round. So if one of those guys isn't there, I wouldn't reach for them in the first round. I don't think those are guys first-round talent, but they're all pretty athletic. They all have some sort of catching, after the catch ability in their own right.
You mentioned Howard being a good two-way guy that can block and catch. Who else from this class do you like that can do a little bit of both? And I realize they're rare these days. Colleges don't ask these guys to block anymore.
That's the thing. All that second group of guys, maybe Bucky Hodges, the Virginia Tech, but that's the only one. The other two are basically just weapons only. They're undersized guys who are, receiving threats only.
All right, how about the running back class? I think we might get three, heck, who knows, maybe four guys go in the first round of this draft. Where do you stand, first of all, on the Fournette-Dalvin Cook argument? I know some people that still swear by Leonard Fournette. His size, I wonder about his ability to run through guys at the pro level. Some people like Cook better. Some people still think Fournette's going to be, the next second coming of the next great running back. What's your take on those two guys at the top?
It's not even close to me, and it's Dalvin Cook.
I happen to agree with you.
Yeah, it is not even close to me just because Fournette's so limited in what he can do. He's so limited in his scope. He has to be in a certain scheme doing certain things, and then he can probably excel at them. But it's not necessarily – he's not a guy who can do it all. He's not a guy who's going to catch out of the backfield. He's not a guy who linebackers are going to worry about if you split him wide because he just doesn't have that type of lateral agility, that sort of stuff. Dalvin Cook can basically do it all, and he's a home run threat anywhere on the field. If he's there when the Giants are picking, you're turning that card in immediately just because of how dynamic a running back he is. I don't think he'll be there, but if he is, that's ridiculous. then the guys after that, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, I'd put Joe Mixon in that mix, but he's not going to obviously get drafted that highly. Those are all guys who, if they're there in the second round, yeah, I'd be completely happy turning that card in, but they're kind of late first, early second round mix for me. They can do a lot, but they're not the dynamic running threats that I think Fournette and Cook are.
We're joined by Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus, and I'll give you guys a plug here because going into last year's draft, you guys made the point that Paul Perkins was the most elusive guy coming out of college. He had the most miss rate. And I got to be honest, I watched the tape of him his full five final games for the Giants when he got a lot of carries. Mm-hmm. He free runners at him, making a miss. Cuts in the hole, baiting guys to go inside. He breaks it outside the tackle. I think he's going to be an excellent pro back. But if the Giants do want to complement him with maybe a guy that's a little bit bigger, with a little bit more power, who do you like from this draft class that might fill in that category?
Guy who's a little bigger, more power. I'll go later in the draft. I think someone like Elijah Hood is more of a power back, the North Carolina product. He was banged up this year, didn't look nearly as good as he did as a sophomore, but he had the most yards per contact per carry season ago in 2015. He's, like you said, a legitimate power back. He runs through arm tackles at will. Doesn't have that elite top-level speed, but I think he'd work in the kind of power sort of man system that the Giants run a lot of.
How about the Foreman kid, and how about P. Ryan, the kid out of Oklahoma?
So I'm very down on P. Ryan.
Why is that?
I just don't think he has the tackle-breaking ability that will translate to the NFL. Okay. He doesn't have the sort of wiggle agility that's he can maybe break some arm tackles, but I just saw him go down on first contact far too often. Our numbers, just his missed tackle numbers aren't great for us. I know he broke that record against Kansas as a freshman, but that was one of the ugliest defensive performances I've ever seen in Kansas. They had safeties running all over the place. It was ugly. I just don't think he's – I don't think he's a guy who's going to push the pile. I just don't really see it. Deontay Foreman, on the other hand, as a power back, he's not – amazing. He's not amazingly physical. He's more of a guy who has that sort of elusiveness, who sort of like a LeGarrette Blount in my mind, who's okay. Going to kind of, you know, shake a little bit in the hole, get through an arm tackle. So if it's between those two in my mind, I'd go Foreman.
All right, now I'm going to focus on Giants here and do a little combo free agency draft. Giants need an offensive tackle.
Yes.
Look, whether it's to compete with Eric Flowers or play the right side, move Bobby Hart inside, whatever you want to do, they want to add a tackle here for some competition at some point this offseason. What's their best route? Is it the draft? Is it making sure you get one of these veterans in free agency? How do you view the overall offseason combined in totality for offensive tackles?
If they could grab Ricky Wagner in free agency, that would be the ideal scenario.
You think he can play left?
I mean, I think he could. I don't think there's a huge difference. I'm not sure I'd switch him because of how good he is at right tackle,
right.
And how, you know, Eric Flowers has 2 years now left tackle. If you flip him over to the right side, you're going to screw him up even more. He's just going to get worse, probably, in my mind. So
okay.
I think that would be the ideal scenario. Ricky Wagner comes in at right. You kick Bobby Hart into right guard. That would be ideal. But Ricky Wagner, there's only one legitimate offensive tackle on the free agency market that's going to start for you right away. So his price is going to go sky high. I'm not sure the Giants are going to want to invest that much at the position. So in the draft, guys I like at tackle, I think our number one tackle on the board is Ryan Ramczyk, the left tackle from Wisconsin. If they can grab him at 23, I'd be happy with that because he only 1 year of starting in college, came from a D3 school, mm-hmm. has incredible movement skills, but he's still raw. You know, he's still developing a lot. He has that kind of, you know, potential where if he keeps developing at the rate he has been, he's going to go, you know, he's going to be extremely good in the NFL. So those two guys, in my opinion, would be, if they got one of those, you'd be happy as a Giants fan.
What's your take on Riley Reiff?
Riley Reiff is just, so one, he gets helped out by the scheme in Detroit. They run one of the quickest passing offenses, although the Giants do as well in the NFL. And two, he graded out around average as a pass rusher. I mean, that's an upgrade, I guess, average for the Giants, but it's not necessarily a guy who you're going to want to pay the price tag of a former first-round pick. He's going to end up getting a contract that he's probably not going to live up to just because of that sort of thing. So I could see the Giants reaching out to go sign him, but I would go other routes.
And now you guys do think, and we'll see if he ends up leaving Cincinnati or not, but you guys did have Andre Whitworth as one of the best pass-blocking left tackles in the league, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, he is. I mean, he is the best tackle on the market, but the thing is I just don't see Cincinnati letting go of him at the
I agree
moment.
With you.
So, yeah.
And he's a guy that's played there his whole career. He probably wants to end his career
yes.
there, and we'll see how that works out. Jonathan Hankins, what do you think his market's going to look like when free agency starts next week?
So he really had a down year. This is probably his worst year in the past three, which is surprising. You know, going into a contract year, I thought he would, you know, step up his game. Didn't really have a great season, but I still think he's put enough on tape in the past that he'll probably get – dollar range is tough, $8 million range. I'm not exactly sure where mm-hmm. you know defensive tackle market ends up, but you'd be happy to have him back, but I just can't see the Giants after Olivier Vernon, JPP, Damon Harrison's contract. There's almost no chance you end up investing that much in your defensive line.
So let's say, in theory, Hankins walks away. The Giants in need of a three-technique defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see somebody on the roster that can step up and do that, Robert Thomas, Jay Bromley, or do you think they're going to have to look outside the organization to bring somebody in?
I think there's a lot of good three-techs in the mid-rounds of this draft.
Okay.
I think second, third, guys like Dalvin Tomlinson, Tansel Smart. There's going to be some talent there that could probably step in and produce right away. You know, they could fit in right away. May not be high-level stars right away, but you have three guys surrounding them that are high-level starters. So you don't need incredible production. I would try to build through the draft at that position.
Who are some of the guys you love in the free agent market that you think will be undervalued and a team can bring in and they can do some real damage?
Undervalued? Oh, putting me on the spot.
Yeah, because I think 2 years ago you guys nailed Jabal Sherrod.
Yeah.
You guys thought he was going to be really good. Mm-hmm. I think he got like 2 for 12 or something like that from the Patriots, 2 for 10, and I thought he was a great contributor for that.
I'm trying to think. Someone who might be undervalued. Maybe Adam Thielen, the wide receiver for the
okay.
Vikings. I think he came on
one.
Very strong at the end of the year. Not going to have just the market for him might not be huge because of what he has, you know, 1 year on tape and came from where he came from. Not a freakishly athletic guy, but he's so good at the catch point. Got open a lot there for the Vikings. They just had some issues with that offensive line that they couldn't get him the ball downfield. So he might be a guy. I'm trying to think of some other guys off the top of my head.
Or even that undervalued. Why don't you
yeah.
give me some of the top guys in the class that you guys really do like, besides the guys we've already mentioned?
Top guys in the class. So all of them got tagged. It seemed like Chandler Jones got tagged.
Yep.
Jermaine Johnson
mm-hmm.
got tagged. all these guys end up getting tagged. After that, like I mentioned, Whitworth.
You like Alshon Jeffrey?
Alshon Jeffrey I do like. I think there's some risk there with already getting popped for the one suspension and, you know, the injury a season ago. But he is hands down the best receiver on the market. I actually kind of like Terrell Pryor as a – if you're talking about value, what each is going to get paid and what you might get out of them, I'd probably lean to the prior side in that that kind of comparison. I think he's just that sort of athlete is you just can't find every day. A guy who's 6'5", 230, running 4.440. He's freakishly good and just scratching the surface at this point. So, yeah, I'd be high on him. There's some safeties. Who was the safety that's come? Duren Harmon is the one guy who I was trying to think
of. Yeah, from New England. Excellent coverage.
New England. He's fantastic as a single high safety. Yes. That's the role he played for them, basically. And it's hard to find single high safeties who can make plays, you know, not just right in front of them. So he's a guy who's probably – the market for him might not be huge because he's only played about 500 to 600 snaps each of the last three seasons. But in every time he's played him, he's been, you know, one of the better safeties in the league. So I think he's a guy who could be kind of a steal on the market.
All right, Mike, final question. I know it's early. I know I will give you the chance to change your answer later.
Okay.
23 for the Giants. Give me a name. What do you got?
Ooh, I think ideal scenario would be I'll go Ryan Ramczyk, the tack from Wisconsin. I think would be ideal just because of how awful that offensive line was last year and how much of a need that position is. I think he could step in and has that sort of high-level potential where he could step in and be good right away and then be even better in the future. So I think that's ideal. I'm not sure Dalvin Cook would be there. It's 1A, 1B with those two guys. If Dalvin Cook's there, you hand in that car because I think he's the best running back I've seen in a while.
You mentioned Ramczyk. I just want to go a little bit more in depth on him.
Okay.
You mentioned only 1 year. He came from, I think, Stevens Point, if I'm not mistaken, the Division III school, something like that, in Wisconsin. When you look at him on tape and you, let's say, put him into the offensive tackle class from either last year or the year before, is he still a first-round pick or is he landing in the first round this year just because it's a weak class?
No, I think he's definitely a first-round pick. There are definitely question marks. I mean, he's raw with his hands. His first punch loses a lot. He doesn't explode through contact at the second level. He's not that kind of physicality guy who's going to, you know, finish a block with a guy on the ground. He doesn't seem to have that sort of mean, nasty streak in him. But the offensive tackle in the NFL is a pass-protecting position. He has all the tools necessary to be an elite pass protector in the NFL. So those guys get drafted in the first round year after year. I think he's a first-rounder no matter what year you're in.
How about Garrett Bowles? A similar guy without a ton of tape on him. Came from a small school. He's a little bit older.
So Garrett Bowles, in our grading system, was not a good pass protector. He got beaten a lot there.
Really?
Utah, which
interesting.
Is concerning considering he's already going to be 25, I think, by the start of next season.
You got it.
The guy's already, you know, that old. Doesn't have the pass protection on tape at Utah. Doesn't have the sort of, you know, consistent production. Got beaten a lot. So I would worry about him in the first round. I like the trade. He's a lot nastier than Ramczyk. He's a lot better run blocker at the moment. So I just don't think first round is far too rich for him.
And finally, Cam Robinson. I know some people see him as more of a right tackle. And one player comp I've actually seen for him is Ereck Flowers.
Yes, that's actually a pretty fair comp considering what Flowers has done in the NFL. I think Cam Robinson's so raw right now in terms of what he does in pass protection. He has some reps that are beautiful, but it seems to lose concentration very easily there at left tackle at Alabama. They didn't run also a ton this year of pure pass blocking snaps. They were run heavy. They had a ton of – when they did run pass, it was a lot of screens, a lot of jet sweeps, that sort of thing. So he doesn't have much in the way of, you know, pass protection pedigree there. So I would be concerned about him in the first round. There's just too many question marks for me to get on board with an offensive tackle. From what we've seen of the offensive tackle sort of learning curve, there's just not a lot of guys come in and are successful right away. It takes 3 to 4 years, and he's a guy who I think it'll take him 3 to 4 years before he ever gets there, if he does.
And that's a theme I think we're seeing in the NFL with the way colleges are using offensive linemen. This is going to become a position scarcity situation in the league pretty quick. The teams tend to re-sign their offensive line. They don't limit free agency. And then the draft classes are going to be tough trying to project guys based on what they do in college. I think these offensive linemen are going to become highly in demand over the next couple of years.
No, I completely agree. And the thing is, it's both sides. We see all the pure pass rushers in the NFL right now moving to the left side because that's where the people are putting their bad tackles.
Von Miller.
Yeah, we see. And so I think both tackles are going to start getting valued. The contracts right now were so weighted to the left side, but we're going to see after the Lane Johnson deal a season ago, we're going to see a lot more right tackles getting paid. Ricky Wagner this offseason is probably going to get paid. It's a very valuable position right now. You can skirt around it to some degree with a quick passing game, but it's still going to kill you when you're in those, you know, two-minute drill situations when the other team knows you have to pass. Yeah, it's going to start being a premium position. We're going to see contracts go a lot higher.
Mike, awesome stuff, my man.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Mike hit cleanup first today on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine in Indianapolis. Tomorrow we'll be back with you at noon, another two-hour show, noon to 2. Paul Dottino will join me here in Indianapolis, another show on Friday, noon to 2 as well. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Intercepted by Apple.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the five, fumble the football.
Bang. Bang.
The pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
The jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the